Well, hi everybody. I'm Jane and I'm a compulsive eater from Maryland. So it's nice to be here on a virtual New Jersey meeting. I don't know if this is if I've got the right town, but if this is a home of Bruce Springsteen. So it's nice town you got there. You produce some pretty good stuff out of Freehold. I am going to tell you what it's like, what happened and what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I believe I've been a compulsive eater all my life. I don't know why. I was a binge eater. By the time, I ended up in recovery, I was eating food out of trash cans. I was eating food with bugs in it. I was stealing food. I was a secret binge eater. My binging was embarrassing to me. It was humiliating, and I couldn't stop. And I was baffled by it because I came into the program very young, and most things in life that I wanted to accomplish, I could accomplish. I wanted to get good grades in school. I got good grades in school. I wanted to play a couple instruments. I played a couple instruments. I wanted to, I was popular. I was elected president of my class. But there was this area of my life that no matter how hard I tried, I just couldn't stop. And, they say we're many and varied in this program. Some of us come in normal weight, some of us come in grossly obese, some of us come in underweight. For me, when I came into OA, I was about 20 pounds overweight, and then I gained about 10 pounds in the program. So all told, I was about 30 pounds overweight, which by many people's definitions is not that much. But I hated myself so much, because of the weight and because of the inability to stop eating. I don't think I would have made it, to 200 pounds. I would have killed myself first. And because I was suicidal, and people would have wondered, why she had everything to live for. Why did this, girl kill herself? And it was because my I could not control this addiction, and my self-hatred was just off the charts. So I wandered into OA in March of 1977. I was 15 years old. I was a sophomore in high school. The only reason I came to OA is because it was in walking distance to my house. I wanted to go to a commercial diet club, and originally my mom said she would take me, and then she said, "Well, no, I think I'd rather you just, let me just try to help you." But OA was in walking distance, and so I knew they had it down at the school that I went to grade school with. And so one day I just said to my parents, "I'm leaving," and I walked into an OA meeting, and I haven't walked out since. So that's kind of what it was like. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. So, I'm very grateful for that because A, I struggled for 3 years to get abstinent, and B, if people had looked at my size, they might have said, "Well, you don't qualify," or whatever. And by the way, I never wanted to qualify to be a compulsive eater. The words Overeaters Anonymous still choke in my throat. The words compulsive eater still choke in my throat. There's nothing glamorous about this one. It's just gross. It's just gross. And it's subtle. It'll kill you real slow. It's acceptable. Many people say it's the first addiction to come and the last addiction to go. So, anyway, I did not want to be a compulsive eater. I just wanted to lose 20 pounds and leave and go about my life. So I walked into my first meeting and I heard the 12 steps, and they resonated with me. There was something about those steps that just sounded, I don't know, magical, maybe, I don't know. The people were very nice to me, so I decided to keep coming back. And I was going to meetings, and I like the stage. I'm a public speaker professionally. I play in a band part-time, so the like, "Look at me, look at me, look at me" is something that, is part of my personality. personality. So, they say this program meets you at the level of your needs, and people who are very shy and have never spoken in public, start coming out of their shell a little bit. For me, I had to learn to kind of shut up, and to listen. And so I was going to this meeting and I wasn't getting abstinent, and everybody thought I was a little darling because I was so young. And one day, a woman from across town spoke. This is why I think it's so important to speak at meetings, because she came from across town and I wanted what she had. She looked good, she was serene. And so I asked her to be my sponsor, and she was going to meetings across town. And so I started doing that too. And the meetings across town were a whole different ball game. Those people across town took the idea of compulsive eating as a life or death matter. And they did not suffer fools. So, when I started complaining to them that I was too young and too thin to be a compulsive eater, and I really didn't want to be there, and what was me, they said, "Well, maybe you don't think you're one of us, but we've heard your, we've heard how you eat, we've heard how miserable you are. So, we're convinced. It may take you a while, but we're convinced." So I started going to that meeting and I started listening more than I was talking. And I saw a lot of recovery. People who were going through terrible things, divorces and job losses and deaths, and they weren't eating over it. And so I started to listen to what they were telling me to do. And what they were telling me to do was the steps and the tools. So step one, tough for me, because I did not like the thought that maybe there was something wrong with me and that maybe I wasn't going to get better, or at least get rid of it. I could get better, I just wasn't going to get rid of it. And by the way, I see people who talk and they say, "I'm a recovered compulsive eater," or, "I know I'll never go back out again." For me, if I were to talk like that, it would be extraordinarily dangerous, because I believe, if step one is really true, then I have the capability of going out there anytime. And so I have to respect who I am. But that was a hard pill to swallow, that I did not eat like normal people. And took me a while to get there. Took me a lot of binging to get there. I worked through step two, which scared me to death, because I thought people who had any kind of belief system were stupid or weak or both. And I didn't want anything to do with it. Plus, it really scared me. Back then, there were people who would had shaved heads and wore white robes and gave out carnations at rock concerts, and I thought I was going to be one of them. I either thought I was going to be really boring or something like that. And so that really scared me, but I went on this journey anyway of kind of developing the idea of something bigger than me. And as I opened my mind and asked a whole lot of people, what their higher power was to them, started to become more clear. And then step three, which for me is a big kahuna of the program. It's the alpha and the omega of the program. I also think it's impossible to do perfectly, because as human beings, we're always going to want to take our will back. It's just the way people are. But there was a word in that years later, when I had to turn something else over big, my financial future, I really studied step three, and the word care came to me, that we were turning our will and our life over to care. So while I was in program, binging in program, gaining weight in program, I was really trying to do what people told me and get a grip on the steps. I also was learning to work the tools. Back then, they told you to make three telephone calls a day, which I'm a big fan of, because I always thought I compulsively ate just because I like to eat. But it wasn't until I tried to put it down that I realized how tied it was to emotions. And what I found, that if I waited till I wanted to compulsively eat, it was too late. I was going to compulsively eat. But if I could address the emotion, then I could stave off the binge. And so I have a friend in program who says she thinks really it, all the 12-step programs are just anxiety management, which is probably true. So thank you. So I started working the tools. I started to really kind of take the slogans seriously. I started getting more meetings. I started making telephone calls. I was doing service when I could. And I was listening to the slogans. Like for me, I thought willingness to go to any lengths meant that I was going to have to, go over to Africa and walk on hot coals. And willing to go to any lengths for me just really meant, that if I wanted to binge between the hours of 3 and 6 every afternoon, I had to go to the library between 3 and 6. That was my willingness to go to any lengths. For me, willingness to go to any lengths meant that if I made 5 telephone calls and I still needed to compulsively eat, I needed to make the 6th telephone call. If I needed to get to a meeting and I didn't have transportation, I had to call somebody up and bug them. So that was willingness to go to any lengths. Anyway, on January 16th, 1980, I had a binge. It was not the worst binge I've ever had. It was not the biggest binge I've ever had. But it was the last binge I had. And it was for to date. And it was right after I had gone to an OA retreat and right after I had moved forward to step 4 and 5. I didn't think I could do step 4 and 5 until I got abstinent. And I had a sponsor encourage me to do that and get it done in 2 weeks. Call her night or day, whether or not if anything was bothering me. So I did that. I went to the retreat. I had this binge. And for some reason, the next day, I didn't pick up. It was not, I had a food plan at the time that I was comfortable with. I remember thinking if I have to live with this food plan for the rest of my life, one day at a time, I could do it. So anyway, it wasn't like somebody, there, the skies didn't open and somebody said, to me, this will be your last binge for, 43 years. It just worked out that way. One day at a time, one day at a time, one day at a time. So anyway, I was able to put the food down. Part footwork, part step work, part miracle. I don't know. And for today, I don't pick it back up, no matter what. No matter what. And so I lost the weight. I've gained, since I was in my late 50s, I gained some weight back in menopause, maybe about 4 or 5 pounds. And I realized that to keep that off and to try to be super thin, I was gonna have to really be hard on my body and myself, and that wasn't worth it. So, I'm still a really pretty thin weight, but it's a couple pounds because that's what happens to women when they hit menopause, and that's okay. I have found a way of coping with life that doesn't require compulsively eating. I'm in a happy marriage, and I remember saying to my husband, I don't know if I can commit to a marriage forever, but I can commit one day at a time to do what it takes to make this marriage work. And we've been happily married for 32 years. So, miracle brought about the OA program. I have 3 daughters. I get along well with all of them. When the youngest one was 8, she was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. Really mad at my higher power about that. My sponsor ran to the hospital. I said, "What do you mean her pancreas is not going to work for the rest of her life? That's like she's 8 years old." And I thought, okay, well, I'm in a 12-step program. We know food plans in 12-step programs. And I sat her down and I kind of said the serenity prayer to her. And I said, "You've been given a life sentence here, but you can choose how you deal with it." She's dealt with it great. I've used this program for job decisions 20 years ago. I made a really risky job decision in my career and went on a path just because I felt like my higher power was leading me there. That has been a hard path, but so amazing. My life is really kind of beyond my wildest dreams. And I thought because it took me 3 years to get abstinent that my higher power is going to zap me dead. from compulsive eating to show what happens when you can't get your act together. And the higher power I believe in now is much more loving and patient than that. So my message to anybody, and I've heard people say, well, Jane, I'll never get, that many years, blah, blah, blah. Maybe you feel bad. And I'm not trying to make anybody feel bad. I'm hoping to make people feel good, because here's the message is, no matter how much you think it's not going to work for you, don't leave. I didn't leave. That's what I did right. I didn't leave. And I also believe that there is a higher power out there that just loves us so desperately, and wants us to get well. It's good. What you see here, it's good stuff. It's hopeful stuff. No matter where you are, no matter how many relapses, it's good stuff. And I'm going to end with a story. As I was going on my journey to, come to grips with a higher power and to get abstinent, I was still doing a lot of binging, and things were getting worse for me. I was starting to mess up my digestive tract. I couldn't concentrate on work when I was binging. My grades were slipping. Things were getting pretty serious. And one night after binge, I remember just crying my eyes out and screaming at my higher power, what do you want from me? Do you want me to die from this? Do you want me to lose my job? Do you want me to have to drop out of school? All of those things seemed very realistic. And there have been a few times in my life where I've heard a still small voice, actually pretty loud voice, where I've just felt like I've gotten a direct message from somebody. And what I heard was, if you want to know my will for you, it's that you not hurt anymore. That's my will. My will is for you to get abstinent so that you don't hurt anymore. Now, that's what not, I didn't get abstinent right after that, but I am convinced that whatever step two is about, it's something good that wants good stuff. So, I just hope nobody leaves. And you can define that any way you want. We don't care. So that's it. That's my story. Thank you.